He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our listeners on this week's version of Car Keys. We've got a lot to say, or at least I do, and we'll see what Jay and Mike chime in with about electric car industry changes that are on the horizon with the new administration, and they're not necessarily positive for electric EV potential buyers and users. However, before I get into that, I will say that there's an article out saying EV sales have been surging recently, very recently, maybe even more so since the new president got elected because of some of the things that may be coming towards us, which are reducing the incentives to buy EVs. So EV sales and maybe hybrids are also up as we go into the first quarter of 2025. We've been back and forth on our show over the past couple of years about the benefits and the negatives and the fears and the loves for all these electric vehicles that are increasingly surface on our roads. But back to the topic of EV subsidies, which the new administration is not in favor of keeping, which means the following. There are legislative efforts introduced by GOP senators seek to repeal the current $7,500 tax credit for EV purchases and also to introduce a $1,000 tax on EV purchases, citing vehicle weight as the reason, because it is apparently, because of the heaviness of EV cars, putting potential, and I think this is bogus, more weight on the bridges, causing accelerated wear and tear. We'll wait for Jay on this for a few
more
minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to chime in on this right away.
Automakers have been quietly preparing for a future in which federal EV incentives no longer exist and expect a lot of challenges in the coming year. Elon Musk is even on tap, saying he doesn't think the 7,500 EV tax credit should be continued. It'll only help Tesla, not the other people, he says, in a some kind of communique that's out, maybe on X. The $1,000 use tax is proposed because whereas there is apparently a gasoline tax every time we buy gas, part of it goes to federal or highway repairs. There is no such tax on the use of electric cars because they don't purchase gasoline. So this is a way to start charging you for owning an electric vehicle, although it is supposedly is a one-time additional option or accessory for when you buy an electric car, a one-time fee. Jay, you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think let's put Musk aside for a bunch of reasons. I think that...
Be concise, please.
Tax credits are great to get the ball rolling, but in the end, eventually, EVs are going to have to sell themselves on their own merits. And I think they can do that.
They can do that. So, I have said so already.
So, you know, we can go over, you know, tax credits are fine. We all jump on tax advantages when we can. We take them when we can, and when we can't, you know, move on with life. So I don't think that the tax credit is going to do all that much. We do see, you know, manufacturers backing off from EV investments and sales, you know, promoting sales. We've gone over that too. In Europe, Porsche is backing off and reinvesting money into their ICE power plant, internal combustion power plants. So we're going back and forth on this issue, and I think there's going to be a balance, and there's maybe a place for all these vehicles.
There certainly is.
Range
Jay.
Is
that,
a problem.
That goes without saying.
You know, we can go on the lack of or the problems with the EV charging stations network, and that was what came out in a review of the Kia EV9, which is Kia's big electric SUV. It's a great vehicle; people love it. But the journalists took the vehicle on cross country trips and just got annoyed and frustrated with charging it. And So, you know, that's going to go on for a while, and so be it. On the other hand, you know, I think the type of vehicles that are great for going all electric is short, you know, delivery
term.
Vehicles, last
short
mile,
mileage
delivery
users, daily.
Vehicles, vans, post office vehicles, things like that. I mean, Rivian is doing it with Amazon with their electric delivery truck. And you know, so that's where we're going. And electric vehicles are fast. I mean, they like to go fast.
Well, I want to get away from this idea that electric vehicles are positives because they have great accelerative capabilities and are fast. You know, the magazines all love to tell you that they can go from 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds in some cases, under 4 seconds, 5 seconds, however you want to, it goes up a scale. And, you know, that's all fine and dandy for bragging rights and for those who want seek a thrill once in a while, but you don't want to. The practical user isn't going to use that part of the vehicle except when needed, not when just that they can, that I can do it, so I will, which is like accelerating from green lights when the stop lights change and that kind of thing. Because you use up a lot of power, extreme battery power when you use that kind of accelerative forces. And except for the fact that if you're on just a short daily cruise with your electric vehicle, you'll not have to worry, I suppose, Jay, if you want to jet away from stoplights on your commuting way to work. But as you said at the beginning, there's certainly a place for both vehicles long range that are going to be continuing to go for the foreseeable future. The problem is that the administration is also tending to not want to continue with the last administration's push to get a lot of charging stations installed all over the country. One of the headlines was, you know, they're going to withdraw some of the incentives for people for corporations or businesses to install charging stations. So that goes back to the old problem that we have talked about a lot, is where do you find a conveniently located charging station are acquiring an electric vehicle, which you plan to use for a major part of your functional daily use.
What needs to be there, though, Robin, is a plan for the layout of all these. It's been just nothing but here's federal money, put yourself a charging station in wherever the hell you want to.
Well, the
there's no logic,
away,
there's
Mike,
no rhyme or reason.
You know, unless they bring it back.
Well, no,
that's right. It's away substantially, so that's not going to help your question.
I think electric vehicles are great for in the city and short runs and daily trips, and nothing beats my diesel with a 700-mile range.
All right, diesel. It's now $3.99 a gallon many places, way above gasoline.
Not way above. I still come out ahead. Between the mileage I get and the price, I'm still coming out ahead with my diesel.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. There are not many diesel vehicles to buy at the moment. So, enough on that. Let's move to Ford. Ford is bringing out a very high performance and high priced GTD version of the Mustang, and now Ford is going to do something that other manufacturers have tried to do. I don't know if they've been successful or not, and claiming that if you go and spend $300,000 plus or minus, whatever it is, for a Ford GT version of the Mustang, you must sign an agreement that you will keep it at a minimum of 2 years before you try to flip it or resell it out in the market. They did this with the Ford GT for a while. There were some lawsuits. They apparently settled the lawsuits with people who violated that requirement that they keep their Ford GTs for 2 years or longer before they tried to resell it. And I think GM tried to do it with versions of the Corvette. I do not know whether that's actively being pursued these days.
Well,
that's just something that's going on if you even want to try to buy the GTD version of the Ford Mustang.
What's the reason?
Much cheaper, less expensive models that'll give you the thrill of a Mustang. So it's just a headline I read.
What's the reason for keeping it for 2 years?
Okay,
because
so
people have been buying them in the early versions. They did this with, I know they did this with the Tesla truck too. People who got the early versions of the truck tried to flip them, and before they started declining in value, they think people are making money on the mic. Is why they do it, and that's perfectly, you know, that's something you can do.
Okay, so let me barge in on this one.
Okay,
I think this is the Ford GT, the Mustang GTD, is a high performance. Race car inspired version of the Mustang. GTD is the American version of a GT3, which is the most widely spread racing car series in the world. And GTD is IMSA's version of a GT3. So the car is a high performance Mustang. Ford plans to build, I forget what the number is, it's like 300 or 500 of every year. For only a couple or 2-3 years, that's the time frame that they expect to build this vehicle, and they have 7,000 applications as of now, I believe. So the idea is that these cars are going to be grabbed and be allocated, like certain Porsche models and certain other high-end manufacturers do, people will hold on to them for 2 or 3 years, and then they'll go and put them on bring a trailer, and they'll go at auction with like 0 miles or 10 miles, and they will go and fetch more than the $300,000 that the base price of the car is. And that will go on for a while, and then you'll see just like the Ford GT. There are a limited number of them. They come up for sale every so often. They sell all. They always sell in the $900 to $1.1 million range. And, yes, people have made money on them, and that will last for a certain amount of time. The bigger picture for Ford is that Mustang sales have been way down. And, my theory is that, there is less of a demand for these muscle cars, and also that the Ford's branding of the Mach-E and confusing people with the Mustang brand between muscle cars and electric vehicles has just been a total flop. But that's just my personal opinion.
Okay. On to steel tariffs and potential future costs of new vehicles. I see it on the horizon as the present administration wants to, and they may not hold, so don't hold me to this, a 25% tariff on all imported steel from outside our United States borders. Not all the U.S. steel that is produced is consumed by just car manufacturers, and they have to go out and buy other sources of steel probably during the course of an annual year's production of parts, components, and the vehicles themselves. However, figure it out. Somebody, if there is a 25% tariff on steel, let's use steel because it may be on other things too, you can do the math or you can do the thinking about what it's going to cost manufacturers to make the current versions of the vehicles you can buy now. That poses two issues. One, you go and buy yourself a car ahead of time, ahead of when these newly made cars with tariffs on steel start coming off the assembly lines, or you may be forced to go down to used cars. That may prove to be an interesting problem for used cars because there are only so many used cars per year available for repurchase, many of them off-lease vehicles that usually go for 3 years and 36,000 miles before you start paying additional usage fees. But you do trade them in, and they come out of the market as either certified new vehicles or used vehicles throughout the used vehicle market. I am very concerned about the 25% steel tax, and I think many of the listeners here should be also. However, if you can't afford to buy a car now, it won't matter to you. It'll just be less affordable coming forward. Jay, your comments.
I think it's a moot point. I would not worry about it.
And why is it a moot point, Jay, since you want to make that statement?
I just don't think that it's going to... Yes, it may affect the price of vehicles. The manufacturing of cars is such a global event that, you know, manufacturing sites are going to shift. There's already European manufacturers, even Porsche, Porsche and Audi are considering having manufacturing facilities here in the U.S.
Been going on for some time. However, you still need steel and to manufacture. And just manufacturing in the U.S. isn't going to solve the problem if there's a shortage of steel.
I don't think we're going to see the price of cars go up by huge amounts because of steel tariffs. But that's just me, and we can reconvene in a couple of years and rediscuss this.
I said at the beginning of this for our listeners who are listening, not you, they may not hold because this is what the administration is doing on many fronts, on many things going on in the country, and it is a way to negotiate counter negotiations, and maybe these tariffs will turn into being 10% instead of 25%
It's a lot more complex than we're going to have a tariff and it's going to raise the price of cars. That's BS, you know.
True.
That doesn't matter. It depends on the blend and the mix, whether the American manufacturers can now catch up. We don't know who's buying what. So to simply say this tariff's going to make cars go unaffordable is just not, it's not
I
logical.
I didn't say that, Mike.
It's not logical.
Get off it. I didn't
well,
say that.
You did. You did.
You kind of did.
No, less affordable is true for those who can afford a $30,000 car that becomes a $40,000 car.
But the very idea that the price of the car is going to go up without a lot of study on where the manufacturers are, where the steel's coming from, is just not logical.
Well, it's been going up without all this discussion about tariffs, okay? We were talking on this show a couple of years ago, the average price of cars being sold was between $30,000 and $35,000. And now it seems to be between $35,000 and $43,000, or what, somewhere in that range. It's going up for other reasons, Mike and Jay. It just makes people who can afford a certain level not to be able to get the same level of car as the prices increase. Technological input does, and then the manufacturers put big sales on them, and sometimes the prices come back down. I saw an ad on a Ford dealer, $7,000 off any new Ford 150 pickup truck, 2024, left over. Now, that's profit that they would get if they didn't have to offer that. The new Rams are being advertised at up to $10,000. That's a 2025 version of certain Ram models. That tells you that they were trying to get maybe an excessive price for it before they started advertising incentives.
Has always been the way
that's always been the way the auto industry has gone, and those of us in the knowledge base of it know that, and that won't change. I agree with you, Jay. That won't change. It may change at a higher level.
I don't say it won't change. I'm just saying that it has always been like this, and the industry is flawed on the retail side, and it has been for decades. And, I just read an article about this, the dealer network model versus direct sales is a constant back and forth battle. Manufacturers in Europe have tried to go the direct sale route, and that's backfiring. So dealers are going to be here for a while. We're going to see these song and dance pricing, things going on for a while longer. And the bottom line is, you put a truck for sale for $90,000 and it doesn't sell, and then you take $7,000 off, and now you're selling it for, $80,000-something. And they're probably still making a lot of money on those trucks. And we know they are. That's where the bread and butter is for the U.S. manufacturers anyway.
A more interesting topic for those who watched the Daytona 500 yesterday, on a recent Sunday, I should say, for the show's broadcasting. Guess what the pace car was at the Daytona 500 this year?
Yes,
it wasn't some high pace thing. It was a Chevy Blazer EV-SS.
Yes,
an electric vehicle uses the pace car.
There were a bunch of them, and I'm not sure they use the same car every time.
Well, it still was an electric car, and instead of a Corvette or a, you know, some high flying internal combustion engine car that could go 200 miles an hour along with the rest of the pack, they used an EV car to demo that it could do that. I thought it was fun.
They should have used the presidential beast.
Well, they talked about that.
The beast was on the track.
Yes, it was.
And they said it couldn't go up on the corners because they were too steep for it to be able to stay up there at a slower speed. I think something like that, Mike. You might have seen that.
Yeah, I saw the whole thing.
Well, the race got stopped for a long time because of a rain delay. I never saw the end of it. I don't know when it happened, but it was fun to watch. And I think the rain delay came in after about 11 or 12 laps at the beginning. And then they showed the 2024 race as a filler for on the station I was watching it.
Robin, it ended the way it always ends. Like, you have a crash 6 laps before the end of the race, and then you have a last crash 2 laps before the race.
And that's what happened?
Never fails.
Okay.
And so I went out for dinner, and I came back, and I saw the last 28 laps of the race. And it's just as if I had seen the whole race. But that's my view on NASCAR.
Okay. Well, it's a fun event for race car fans, okay? And I have never gone down to it, and I don't know, Jay, whether you ever have, but I never will probably, but it's an event.
Back to the industry, I just remember we talked about that Honda-Nissan merger deal?
Yeah, it did.
And remember I said that it was not going to happen, that if anything, Honda was going to absorb Nissan?
Nissan didn't like that, right?
Nissan didn't like that, and the deal is off the table.
Yeah.
So much for that merger, which was not going to be a merger of equals because they're not equal. But they still plan on cooperating on a bunch of projects and vehicles, I guess. And there's still some synergies between the two companies possible. So.
Okay. Let's talk about a recent storm we had. If you hear the station, if you hear the show very soon after, you will know that we had snow, and then we had rain, and we had sleet, and we had freezing rain, and the roads were a mess over one of the nights that the storm lasted through. And as I was driving around after the storm, I noted the road conditions varied quite a bit between town maintenance and state maintenance. The roads were remarkably good at the state level, and I don't know what they put down now, but I could not see real evidence of salt particulate matter. So whatever they did a very nice job doing it. However, the rain saturated the snow, and where the snow had built up on the sides of the roads, if the rain got to be like a soaked sponge, the water had to exit the snow somewhere. And in many cases, I noticed on the roads, both town and highways, the road slopes varied, which varied how the water was exiting the snow and where it went. Did it go down the same side of the road that it came out of the snow and enter a unplugged storm drain and get drained away? No, it crossed the road. And in some cases, they were frozen areas, which are very slippery if you ever try to do anything but drive straight over them without braking, and unless they were on curves. But that kind of thing I have not seen on our roads in a long time. Jay, you mentioned your driveway. My driveway, I could skate on my driveway after the storm, and probably it'll stay that way because the forecast post-storm is for extra cold weather for up to a week, which means those ice that's on my driveway will not melt.
No, it will
any
not.
Comments about your driving ideas?
I haven't been on the roads, to be quite frank. I was briefly last night. I think they're doing a great job keeping the roads clean. But
they did indeed. Hallelujah to the men who drove the trucks, maintained our roads.
If you're going to get out of your driveway, you're probably going to be fine. And hopefully my driveway.
But it does say, I will say that the snow that fell on tops of roofs of cars is at a very dangerous substance right now because it is not just soft snow that will slip off the car. Oh, I want to go to a safety thing. I went to a Torrington from our listing area the other day, and I did. I cleaned off the hood, I cleaned off the back, I cleaned off the sides, but I did not clean off the roof. And I came to a stop at a stop sign, and by that time, the temperature outside was above freezing, and a whole platform of snow came right down across the driver's windshield, making it invisible to see anything until it passed by the windshield
and
went off
before,
the car.
But in another
that
life,
is a safety
I
issue.
That... I did the same thing. I couldn't scrape off the snow on top of the roof, and I came to a stop or a light, and the snow came down and just wiped out my wipers, and I was left with no wipers.
I saw several cars with the same situation, but I'm more concerned about if you had been moving, let's say going down a hill and you put the brakes on and it came down, you could have found yourself in a very dangerous, temporarily,
so
many few seconds of invisible visibility out your windshield, which could have put you into
tip.
A panic.
Here's a safety tip, and it goes back to knowing your vehicle.
Right.
All these modern SUVs or cars usually have a sand or off-road or snow mode in the car. And I know that in my Volkswagen, which is 10 years old, so it's not that modern, it works extremely well. You put you turn the knob and get it onto off-road or snow mode, and the car will creep down, and the ABS will work on each individual wheel and keep your pace down. It works, and same thing going uphill. Traction control works extremely well. So use the snow mode. Find it and use it. That's my tip of the day as far as driving in really harsh conditions in the winter.
Well, and I think as well what didn't get mentioned about these snow ice caps on the cars now is the fact that if that blows off and goes behind you, that has some very serious ramifications.
Well, we talked about that, Mike, last week
We didn't have the combination of the ice. We didn't have the ice in it. This is a much different kind of thing, and it's extremely dangerous, and you shouldn't be going out at all with any of this on top of your car for everybody's sake.
Well, I can guarantee you that probably less than 20% of the people actually listen to this kind of suggestive safety tip and do something about it storm after storm after storm. And as Jay drives a minivan, he can get to the top of the minivan, but the people who drive the bigger vans don't do anything about getting up on the roofs of those vehicles. And then you've got tractor trailers with snow on top of the trailer part, and you can't even see it on top from the ground level. And yet it's there to be come off also as they are careening down the road at 70 miles an hour on the way to their destination.
Or,
so it is a very dangerous condition, which the best way to deal with it, if you are even aware of it and you know what to do, is to stay well back, and I mean well back, not just 300 feet, because those platforms of snow will fly and stay up in the air. And you're moving forward at the same speed the vehicle that's losing the snow in front of you is doing it. So you're going to run right into that flying chunk of snow or ice or whatever it is, and it can do real damage, not to mention possibly cause an accident.
You know what my solution is, right?
Yeah, don't drive.
No, drive faster, pass them.
Well, you can't. The people aren't driving the way you can drive and see that kind of thing and do something about it. And
so
you can only pass them if you don't have, if you're not in the right lane and have people passing you in the left lane, and it happens. So that's a nice idea, Jay, that is very hard for most drivers to experience and be able to do.
And on that note, gentlemen,
we are Car Keys with Mike, Jay, and Robin. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.